So now Krishna asks Arjuna, like any teacher would, that did you listen and did it benefit you? So that is obviously a teacher wants to know. I have spoken for 700 verses, you know. So did you even listen to me? And two, has it changed? See, the teacher wants to know. So he asks Arjuna this question. Actually, this is the only question Krishna asks in the entire Bhagavad Gita. That's one question. Most questions Arjuna is asking, you know, what is the, you know, what is the hallmarks of a wise person, and which is superior, path of karma or path of knowledge, and if path of knowledge is superior, why are you asking me to do this karma? All that. So Arjuna asks, but this is the only one question which Krishna asks. Verse number 72. Kachidetat srutam partha. Twai ekagrena chetasa. Kachit jnana sammohaha. Kachit agnyana sammohaha. Pranashtaste dhananjaya. So Dhananjaya was one of Arjuna's name. So Kachit etat shrutam partha. O partha, O Arjuna, have you listened to anything? Kachit means anything of this have you heard? And by you has it been heard? Ekagrena, single-pointed chetasa, mind. So listening has to be with single-pointed mind, where my full attention should be on listening to the teacher. Single-pointed mind. Have you listened to it? And if you have listened, that's one. So one question is, I have been speaking, so did you even hear it? And if you heard it, did you listen with single-pointed attention? And if you did it create any change in you? Kachid agnana sammohaha. So this delusion born out of ignorance, has it pranashta de dhananjaya? Nashta means destroyed. Pranashta means prakarshena nashta. So totally destroyed. O Arjuna, so A, have you listened? B, have you listened with attention? C, has this removed your delusion and your ignorance? Has that happened? Then and then only my teaching was worthwhile. Otherwise, it was a waste. So teacher, as we had talked last week, it is teacher's responsibility to teach. Once you have got this knowledge from your guru, it is required that you pass it on. So that is requirement. There is no choice in that. Because you have a guru rin. You have a debt to your guru and to the rishis. So how do you pay back that debt? By passing on this knowledge. So that is required. But teacher is like a doctor. Like a doctor, now a patient got admitted to the hospital, very sick, and didn't think they were going to survive. And then after a lot of antibiotics, this and that, slowly the patient has gotten better. And now tomorrow he's going to be discharged. So the doctor will still come and say, how are you feeling? He knows that the patient is well and tomorrow is going to go home. He can see in the patient's face, you know, he's happy, he's feeling better. But if he has to ask, how are you feeling today? And you know, that's the way doctors will go. Or even another relative who goes will say, how are you feeling today? So same way, teacher is asking the student, how are you? How has the, though he knows, see, the teacher knows from the student's face, from his clarity of vision, from his the joy in his face, he knows that the student has benefited. But he still has to ask, how are you doing? How did it help you at all? And ekagrena, with attention. Knowledge can only happen if we pay attention. If you don't pay attention, you won't benefit from this. And we only pay attention to what we think is important. If I think this is important for me, I'll pay attention. Otherwise, my mind will wander. So there's a beautiful story. There was this guru who had three students and they were walking through a market. So one was the son of a florist, one was the son of a priest, and one was son of a businessman. So they were walking through this busy market. And as they were walking, the guru, after they walked through the market, so asked them, so what did you notice when you walked through the market? So the son of the florist says, you know, we passed a flower shop and I could smell and I could tell which is a jasmine, which is a rose, which lily, all of those flowers, those I could tell. I remember that flower shop. And the priest says, the priest's son, he says, you know, we passed a shop that sells religious things and I could hear the bell ringing and I could smell the incense and the agarbatti and the dhoop. And then the businessman's son says, you know, we passed a jewelry shop and the jeweler was counting his gold coins and he had 100 gold coins. So how did you know? He says, from the sound, I could tell how many. So all three of them passed through the same market, but the florist noted the flowers, the businessman noted the money, and the priest noted. So whatever you are interested in, is that's where you pay attention. So that's why we have to develop an interest in this, that it is something which is good for me, which will benefit me, then and then our full attention will be there. It's like a husband and wife go to the mall. Now, husband wants to buy a blue shirt and the wife wants to buy a red dress. After they come out of the mall, wife asks the husband, what did you see? He says, oh, there were a lot of shops with the blue shirt. And he asked the wife, what did you see? Oh, there were a lot of shops I saw had a red dress, but there was one. So wherever my attention is, he doesn't care about all the women's dresses and all he's interested in. So whatever I'm interested in, that is what I will see. And so one-pointed attention is very important. There's a very beautiful story about Shukdev. Shukdev Muni was a great, great soul. He was the son of Ved Vyasji. As you know, Ved Vyasji is the one who compiled all the Vedas, organized them, wrote the Mahabharata, Puranas, a lot of things he has done. He was probably the greatest contributor to Hindu thinking ever in the history. So Ved Vyasji's son was Shukdev Muni. And from childhood, he was very detached. He said, Father, look, don't ask me to go to any lectures. Don't ask me to write. Don't ask me to compose. Don't ask me to teach. This world is full of Maya. I just want to stay in my meditation. From childhood, he was interested in. And I'm not interested in the world. I just want to stay by myself and be in my solitude with God. So Ved Vyasji said, you know, that's not right. I mean, you have to function in the world. No, Father, he said, okay, I'll tell you this. Go to this Raja Janak, the king. I want you to go and just spend a few days with him and learn from him. So very reluctantly, Shukdev goes, because Shukdev was already such an evolved sage. And he said, that guy is a king and he lives in a palace and he has multiple wives and he sleeps on silk and he has jewelry and so much money and he's running the kingdom. What is he going to teach me? You know, he was already very evolved. And so he said, this is a king. He's a man of the world. How can he? My father has said, so I'll go. So he goes and he tells the guard. He says, you know, I'm Shukdev. I'm son of Ved Vyasji. My father has sent me to meet the king. So he says, the guard says, please wait. I have to go ask the king. So he goes to King Janaka and Janaka understands that who has come. So he doesn't run out to greet him and all. You know, this is a great sage has come. He says, ask him to wait. God says, wait? He's a son of Vedvya. Tell him to wait. How long should he wait? 2 days. Let him wait. God is surprised, no? Because this is a Mahatma has come and his king is telling him wait. So he doesn't go and tell Shukdev 2 days. He said, king has said, please wait. So Shukdev, okay, I have to wait. And he sat down and went into meditation. And 2 days he was in deep meditation. After 2 days, King Janaka. So what happened to that? He thought maybe he ran away, you know, if he got discouraged. He wanted to see if this guy is even sincere or not. He has come to learn from me. So Shukdev, he said, sir, he's still in meditation. 2 days he has been sitting. He hasn't moved. So okay, wake him up, bring him to me. So he brings him. So then he said, okay. So he says, my father has sent me to learn from you. So king says, okay, so I have a job for you. So he says, what job? He says, there is this bowl full of oil and it's full to the brim. There is not even a drop more you can put. He said, I want you to carry it through the marketplace, and my guards will be following. And if a single drop spills, they have instructions to cut off your neck. What kind of teacher is this? You know, where did my father send me? He's cursing his father. He's going to cut off my neck if a drop of oil falls. So he's very scared, but you know, he has to do it, right? So he's walking very carefully through the whole marketplace, 2-3 hours, and the guards are checking and following. 2-3 hours later, he comes back and the king says, oh, you are back? He says, obviously the oil must not have fallen, otherwise you wouldn't have been alive. He says, no, not a drop of oil falls. The king said, if I had told you, doesn't matter how much oil falls, what would have happened? He said, I would have walked and, you know, casually, but I was very careful. So king says, now tell me how many shops did you pass? He says, shops? I don't even know. How many people did you meet? Did you cross? I didn't see anybody. My attention was on the oil. How was the smell, you know, of the market? No smell. There were so many people talking. Did you hear them? Nothing. I heard nothing. I smelled nothing. I saw nothing. My attention was on the oil because I... So, but you went through the marketplace, right? He said, yes. He says, that is how you have to live in the world. Keep your attention on Bhagwan. Keep your attention on the Lord. And then do whatever you have to do. So you cannot run away from the world, especially you and I. And same thing he told him, you cannot run. You have to function in the world. So the message is that while you are walking and doing everything, your attention should be on Bhagwan. And then do whatever. You can work as a businessman or a doctor or an engineer or a housewife or a mother or a father. Whatever your duties are, you perform them, but constantly chant his name, remember the Lord, and do the work as a service to God. So keeping the Lord in your mind, you can do everything. So that is the essence of this particular story. And that's what he says, that when you are listening, listen with one pointed, because we have so much ignorance. Like in Arjuna's case, you know, he had so much ignorance. Why? Because he had not understood the situation. And he was a totally a devastated individual, because the Gurudev always used this word non-apprehension and misapprehension. Now, what does that mean? Non-apprehension means not seeing the situation as it is and projecting your own insecurities and fears upon the situation. Like, of course, no lecture of Vedanta can be complete without rope and snake. So we have to talk about rope and snake. Some of you are new, but I'll just briefly summarize it. So what happened is that suppose you are walking on a dark path, which is not dark and not sunlight. It is shady. It is just the twilight where the sun has already set. You can barely see, and you are walking on a forest path and you see a rope. But if it was completely dark, you wouldn't have seen the rope. If it was completely sunlight, you would see the rope as a rope. But it is a twilight, it is dark. So you don't see the rope as a rope. So what do? You say there is something there and it's a forest, it has to be a snake. So not seeing the rope as a rope, you project a snake upon it. And then you get afraid, oh, this snake will bite me. You start sweating, your pulse goes up. And if your foot accidentally touches, oh, I was bitten by the snake, I want to go to the... There actually is no snake, but not seeing the rope as a rope, I project the snake upon it due to my delusion, due to my ignorance. So same way, Arjuna, when he went into the battlefield and he told Krishna, take my chariot between the two armies, we'll be doing the first chapter after we finish the 18th chapter, and that talks about Arjuna's grief, Arjuna's delusion. And there, he misunderstood the situation. See, what was the situation? That this is a war of dharma. It is a war of good. Good against evil. The Kauravas represented evil. They represented corruption. They represented all the negativities. And they had stolen the kingdom from the Pandavas, who were rightfully the king. And they had consistently done wrong things throughout. So they had to be removed, otherwise India would be under the leadership of the Kauravas. So not understanding that, why am I here? not understanding, I am here to represent the good. It is my duty. So non-apprehension of the situation, then what does he do? He starts misapprehending. He says, he starts looking at not as a war between good and evil. He says, I am fighting the war. And if I am fighting and my guru is there and my grandfather is there and my cousins are there and my uncles are there and all these people, and how can I fight them? And then the war will create so many problems. So all these wrong arguments come because he has not understood the situation as it is. And when we don't understand a situation as it is, and in life also, you know, when we are dealing with people, they say you have to know what it is. But if we don't, then we project our own insecurities. Or if, like a person we meet, I'm not, to me, this person looks like a crook. You haven't even met him, you don't even know him, but we already have our prejudgments, preconditions. So they say, see the people as they are. Judge them correctly. Do not prejudge. Do not have your own preconditions. Do not have your own misconceptions. So see the situation. So that's what Arjuna had done. He had misunderstood the situation based on wrong thinking. So Krishna did not change the situation. See, Krishna was God. All he could have done was just done like that. The entire Kaurava army would have been destroyed and Pandavas would have won. All he had to do is just move his finger and the whole situation would have changed. He said, I'm not here to change the situation. I'm here to teach you what is right. And that is the knowledge, a true knowledge. That's why a guru will not do things. Same thing we tell our children. For a while, I'll take care of you. But after that, now, how long can I, you know, keep on taking care of you? You have to let them go. I've given you the right knowledge. Now you have to live the life. But there are some parents who are so different. I know one lady who has actually moved. Her daughter moved to college and she moved there and took an apartment. You know, daughter has gone to college. She has left her husband and she's living in an apartment outside where the daughter is. Of course, that is height of, you know, dependence. The daughter is dependent on mother. Mother is dependent on daughter. But generally, once you give the right knowledge, then you say, I am not going to no longer run the world for you. You are on your own. So same way, the teacher, having given the knowledge, then even earlier in the verse number 63, Krishna says, Yat echasi tatha kuru. I have now given you this knowledge. Now you decide what is good for you. You practice that. You follow that. So that is the essence of this verse, that Krishna wants to know, Arjuna, have you listened? Have you listened with attention? Has it penetrated? Because see, our skull is so solid, made of solid bone. It's so hard. Nothing can penetrate except there are two small holes. Bhagwan has made these two little holes, but we have to utilize them. And learn by listening, not only hearing. So that's what Krishna says, that have you heard, and has it removed your ignorance? Your delusion born out of ignorance, has it been removed or not? Ajnana sammoha, delusion born out of ignorance. One is ignorance, and then one is acting based on that ignorance is called delusion. So that is this question, and next week we'll listen to Arjuna's answer. And actually, this answer is so beautiful that it gives us the phala shruti. Phala shruti means the fruit. Like you say, oh, what did I get from studying the Bhagavad Gita? So this one verse will tell us what is the fruit of this knowledge. Like when you have planted a mango tree, after 10 years you get the phala, you get the fruit, and then you say, okay, now I am enjoying the fruit. So similarly, having studied the Bhagavad Gita, what is the fruit, what is the result, that we will hear in Arjuna's answer. One verse pretty much gives us the benefit of studying Bhagavad Gita. Why should we study the Bhagavad Gita? It's a very beautiful verse. And then after that, there are a few verses about Sanjaya. Sanjaya talking about how he benefited from listening to the Bhagavad Gita. Because as you know, Sanjay was sitting in Dhritarashtra's palace, but he could see what was happening because of Vyasa. Vyasa had given him that Divya Drishti. So we'll talk about that next week. Any questions, any comments? We have about 10 minutes. Either about these verses or maybe any other topic, you know, you may want to talk about or discuss. We have time. If I can, I'll answer it. I'll try. But anything else that on spirituality, Hinduism, anything that's not clear or perplexing you, we can discuss that. We have 10 minutes. Yes.
I have one for confusion.
Yes.
Sir, I had this question. When the misconception is created, like misconception created by others, okay, you are right on your part, but the misconception is created by others. Like in Ramayana, the Ram was a Purush who knows his wife very nicely, right? Sita. When Sita was, I feel, Vichara character in Ramayana, because she went with his husband 14 years of this Vanvas, right?
Right.
And then after coming,
there's a chronic coming, question.
Because of that, Dhobi told that he is staying with this Ravan, who has a Sayyam on him, even though he is a negative character, with a good character, like good one thing he had is a Sayyam. He didn't even touch the Sita, right?
Right.
So after listening, after the misconception created by that Dhobi, why did he told his wife go and stay there? I mean, go in the, and when she, like this was the beautiful days when she started to like
live together.
Yeah, and then again the separation. You go to the again one was, I will stay here, and then on this when she was like a pregnant and. And the Bichara to love and push, even he had father to take care. I mean, this always confused me. Why the misconception created by mother?
Right.
And she has to face so many things.
That is true.
Yeah, see, no, that's a good question. I'll try my best to answer it.
Happy Women's Day.
I know. See, Ramchandra ji always lived his life as an ideal person. If you look at, he was an ideal son, ideal husband. Even when his wife was kidnapped, he went through all the hardship to rescue her and save her and fight the battle and fight the war. He didn't just say, oh, she's gone across the ocean, leave her. He went and so whatever his duty was, he always did his duty. His duty towards his brothers, towards his parents, towards everybody, and towards his kingdom. See, when a person is a king, and then he's also a husband, he's also a, you know, a brother and sister. So the duty towards the kingdom becomes higher than his personal duty. See, his duty towards his wife or towards his children to be born. So he did not want that in the kingdom this idea should propagate that, you know, that even though she lived with somebody else. So he was ready to sacrifice his personal good for the benefit of all. That my duty towards my kingdom is higher than my duty towards my wife. Where even the impropriety, even the suggestion of impropriety should not be there. They cannot say, oh, you know, Ram accepted her even though she was a fallen woman. We don't know that. And they'll say, how do we know that Ravan did not, you know. So even the suggestion of impropriety should not be there. So his duty to his kingdom was higher than his duty towards his family. So he lived as an ideal man. Secondly, he didn't throw her in the forest to be abandoned. He sent her to the ashram of Valmiki's ashram, where she was properly taken care of and the proper delivery happened, and she was, and the love and kush were brought up with excellent instructions. They're living in an ashram of a sage. They were brought with the best instruction. They were great warriors. They were great scholars. So he did not abandon her. But yes, people always have this question. But what I feel that whatever I can learn, I should learn from Ravana's, because Ramchandra, see, the, at that time I was not there. Ramchandra ji was with what motive he did, what thinking. So instead of worrying about that, how Ramchandra ji lived his life, let me live my life as an ideal person, like an ideal mother, ideal wife, ideal, you know, brother and sister. So let me live my life according to a bit. I was not there at that time, why it happened. And instead of perplexing my mind, see what I can get from Ramayana. Learn from the positives. Because again, Krishna, you say, why did he do this? He had so many wives and this. Learn from Krishna's life. Read his Gita. You know, read Ramayana. Ramchandra ji has given such beautiful advice to Lakshmana when Lakshmana was confused. Same thing. When he was deluded about why did we come to the forest and all that. And he gives him beautiful advice that there are certain things are emotion. Duty always is higher than emotion. What is my duty is has to be, sometimes that's why a surgeon will not operate on his own child because he gets emotionally involved. But somebody else's child, he can. So emotions can sometimes take over you. But if your duty always has to be higher than emotions. So that's what he's demonstrating in that. That my duty to my kingdom and to my subjects is higher than my duty to my wife or to my children.
But at the same time, he never married. He kept the idol of Sita.
Yeah.
When they're doing the yajna, he kept the idol of Sita.
Kept the idol of Sita because, next to him,
yeah,
right?
She was always there spiritually. Only the body was not there. So he was surrounded by her.
And then if she went through certain things, we don't know. It might be prarabdha. See, everybody. And then she also never protested. She never said. She said, okay, that's what. So you can see that how this was her chance to show her glory, her greatness. That way you respect Sita ji. Look how she had a tough life and still she. So there are a lot of factors in this. So she was such a great woman that she uncomplainingly sacrificed everything for her husband. And when her husband says that's not right, she understood. She left without not even one saying, why am I being sent? So, you know, different times, different people's greatness you see. Like Lakshman's greatness you see at certain times. Bharatji's greatness you see when he put the slippers. So each character it's like in a play, each character gets a chance to highlight their part. So here Sita ji's greatness is being shown. Ramchandra ji is reducing his own to glorify Sita ji. So people say, oh, he didn't do good enough, but how great Sita ji was. Ramchandra ji has no problem with that. So I think there are many factors in it.
More recently, Mahatma Gandhi.
Yes.
Same thing. He also left everything and wife went with him.
So. Right, right. His wife's.
More recent.
Exactly. And he used to make his wife clean the bathrooms. You know that, right? Even those days, they used to. Bathrooms were so dirty. He said, because if everybody else is cleaning, you have to clean too. So you can say, look, bichari poor. Even though, you know, he could have, you know. And same thing. He didn't take care of his children because he had no time. His children, unfortunately, were neglected because he was so busy taking care of the country. So his duty to his country was greater than his duty towards wife and children. Like Buddha, he left his wife and children. He said, oh, poor wife and children grew up without father. But if he had not left, Buddhism would not have come. See, millions of people are benefiting. So, yeah, we cannot judge. Yes.
You said that you can carry over your spirituality to the next next life. But we don't remember what we did in the last life. So how could you carry your spirituality?
No, we don't remember, but the jiva remembers. The subtle body, which you at that moment may not remember, but Krishna guarantees that in the sixth chapter. He says, don't worry about it. I will make sure that wherever you are, you continue your journey. That's why people like Raman Maharishi, by age 6, he was going into samadhi. He was going into deep. Shankaracharya, by age 5, he was writing commentaries on Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads and all. How could they have done that? It had to be previous life. Mozart was composing. He was given a piano. And by age 5, he was already composing operas. Nobody taught him. They just gave him the piano. He started playing and started. It has to be previous life. He may not remember it. Bobby Fischer was a chess grandmaster at age 9. Somebody gave him a chess board. He picked it up. By 9 years, he was defeating all the world champions. So a lot of these things, we may not know it, but it is there.
Your subconscious mind,
right.
you carry over that knowledge.
Exactly. Right, right.
So those are like vasanas carrying on from...
Yeah. See, because what goes in the next life is this mind and intellect, this subtle body goes, accompanied, propelled by the vasanas, my tendencies. That's why a person who wanted to learn music in this life and couldn't learn music probably will be born in the house of a musician if his desire is strong enough like that. If somebody was very poor and wanted to be rich, the next life he will be born in a rich family. So that's why they say a person who is spiritually progressed, next life will be born in the house of yogis. That's what Krishna says in the 6th chapter. You will be born in the house of yogis or very wise people where you will continue your journey. So he takes responsibility for that. We don't have to worry.
So the vasana goes with you too?
Yes. All your vasanas, if you have not got rid of them, good and bad both. So the idea is to reduce vasanas so that you don't have too many vasanas. Don't have too many selfish desires. Reduce selfishness, anger, greed, jealousy, because all those things will create more and more vasanas. Live a life of service, of love, compassion, sharing. So slowly, slowly you reduce your vasanas. And even in Yog Vasishtha, when Ramchandraji, he asks his guru, there was a time when he was also confused. And he said, what is spirituality? He says, destruction of vasanas is spirituality and strengthening of vasanas is materialism, is wrong. So, vasana dadhyam. So, if you are strengthening vasanas, means anything I strongly desire and I want and I acquire and possess more and more, that will increase the vasana. Whether it's money, whether it's property, whether it's business, whether it's power, name, fame. So, work, not that you don't have success, but it should not become an addiction, should not become a habit. You should live your life relatively balanced. And we'll talk next week about what is the state of a realized master. I'll talk a little bit about that. I recently had some occasion to listen to some teachers, so we'll talk about that.
It's like differentiation of attachment and detachment. What you have to be attached and to what extent.
Right.
And detached to what extent and what you have to be.
Exactly. Very
that's
true.
The one like idle life which would balance pain and pleasure would be taken in the same manner no
right.
matter what.
Yeah, so attachment increases vasanas and detachment reduces. Om sarve bhavantu sukhina, sarve santu niramaya, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Deva Namah Hari